Welcome to a Juno afternoon on Monday, February 26th, 2018. I'm your host, Scott Burton. Thanks for joining us. On today's show, we'll talk about Rock Juno and the Juno Public Library's 2018 Year of Kindness for Kids. Steve Kosas will preview Tuesday's planetarium presentation on Mars. We'll get the details about this Thursday's singer-songwriter showcase at 360. And we'll highlight weekend activities at the City Museum with Jane Lindsay and Jody DeBryan. Those interviews, national native news, bird note music, and more right here, live and local on a Juno afternoon. Currently 35 degrees here in the capital city.
This is national native news. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. As Congress begins talks over a potential infrastructure plan, tribal leaders are highlighting the need for broadband to be part of the conversation. Matt Laszlo has more from Washington.
As more and more of the economy is based on the web, tribal stakeholders are growing continuously more vocal in advocating for broadband internet in Indian Country. Harold Pruner is chairman of the Native American Broadband Association, and he's one of those leading the charge for what he sees as a time-sensitive issue.
We now know that if we don't get Indians and rural people connected to broadband, if they miss this swinging ring now, this brass ring, then the digital opportunity gap widens tremendously.
Broadband deployment has been promised to Indian Country since President Barack Obama's stimulus package back in 2009, but results have fallen short of those promises. Talks of Congress passing its own infrastructure package has renewed hopes of bringing broadband to underserved parts of Indian Country, but also the fear of being overlooked. That was also the message the National Congress of American Indians President Jefferson Keel reiterated in his State of the Indian Nations address this year.
Tribal infrastructure is American infrastructure. In 2018, no infrastructure bill should pass unless it includes Indian Country's priorities.
As for Pruner, those priorities are crucial for fostering Indian Country's growing economic potential.
For us to attract industry, they need high-speed broadband. You don't have it, you lose out to the larger towns or municipalities that can provide that. So it makes us, it allows us to be competitive. It allows us to market our wares worldwide. We're connected to the world.
The White House has released a preliminary version of its infrastructure plan, and Indian nations were only mentioned once in it. I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
A tribal college recently celebrated and hosted a discussion about the mixed heritage of students who are both Native American and African American. Rhonda Lavaldo reports.
Haskell Indian Nations University in Lawrence, Kansas, receives Native American and Alaskan Native students from all over the country. With that amount of tribal diversity also includes students who are Native American and African American. Since February is Black History Month, the student newspaper held a panel discussion on their experiences of being biracial. Haskell student Baron Hoy, who currently holds the title of Haskell Brave, is both Muscogee Creek and African American.
Diversity is very important to talk about in the Native American community because, you know, we all have like either we're mixed with different tribes or we're mixed with different ethnicities. And, you know, that kind of brings a new cultural aspect, a new cultural look into what it means to be Native Americans.
Earlier in the semester, professional basketball player Damon Bell Holter also talked about his being a mentor to those kids who are African American and Native American.
And once I just did my research and kind of researched my black side, became more knowledgeable of myself, that's when I gained confidence and realized like, it doesn't matter what anybody thinks. So like, that's what I want those young mixed kids, you know, to understand. Like, you know, our communities, you know, we're bad at kind of shunning mixed people, and it's the colonizer mindset, you know, of just because you're not full blood or just because you don't like you didn't grow up a certain way, and a lot of the time it's not their choice. So, you know, being able to be around, being a mentor and a role model, especially those kids who are mixed, who are facing those things, it's really special to be able to have that connection and make them realize like, you don't have to worry about, you know, what people think of you.
The discussion was well attended, with many thanking those students who spoke up during the panel. One student stated she was going to start a Native American, African American student club. This is Rhonda Lavaldo for National Native News.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians, promoting obesity prevention, improved nutrition, and physical activity. More at hanc.aaip.org. Support for this program comes from Montana State University in Bozeman, offering an on-campus master's and online graduate certificate in Native American Studies. More information can be found at montana.edu/Native American.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to a Juno afternoon here on Monday, February 26th, 2018, about 6 minutes after the hour. Scott Burton, your host today, and I've been joined here in Studio A by Taylor Shea and MJ Grandy. They represent AUYC and the Juno Public Library. We're going to be talking about the 2018 Year of Kindness for Kids. Taylor and MJ, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks, Scott. Great to be here.
It's nice to have you here. So I know about 2017 Year of Kindness, sort of community-wide. Is that what inspired the 2018 Year of Kindness, Taylor?
Yes. The 2017 Year of Kindness was hosted by the Juno Police Department, and Rock Juno, which stands for Raising Our Children with Kindness, has taken on the 2018 effort with a focus on children. So it's just kind of a continued effort with a focus in the young population of the community.
Okay, so you are the Early Literacy Outreach Coordinator for AEYC, is that right?
Yes.
And remind us the acronym AEYC.
AEYC is the Association for Education of Young Children.
Okay, and then your partners with ROC, tell us about that again,
yeah,
please.
So ROC is, again, it stands for Raising Our Children with Kindness. It's a community collaboration with several different organizations and people in the community that believe in that message of raising our children with kindness and that it will have a positive effect on our community as a whole. They're relatively new to Juno, and so they are kind of launching with this Year of Kindness for Kids and using it as a way to connect different organizations in the community to fill different needs and gaps to achieve their goals.
And MJ, you and the library must be one of those partners.
Indeed. We like being involved in anything that has to do with kids, because the tie is, we essentially believe that if you can read and have a literate life and mind, your contributions and your participation in the world are limitless.
Okay. And you're the Youth Services Coordinator or Librarian, right?
I am indeed.
Tell us about a few of the opportunities we'll have to take our kids to the libraries.
You have the opportunity to bring your child to the library every single day. We have materials everywhere. Specifically, we're focusing this month on resources for toddlers, for your most little people at the library. So the initial way to get involved, other than walking in the door and finding the board books and the blocks and the Duplos, and we try to dissuade Legos as choking hazards from those littlest group, which is why we have the Duplos to play with. But anyhow, we have on Mondays, we have regularly scheduled toddler times. And those really are, you know, a toddler, the age is not so much as the behavior. When they toddle, they are a toddler. So it's when they're ambulatory, a little more willing to engage in the world outside of their own specific body and their care provider, when their world opens up a little bit larger. So we have that at the downtown library on Monday mornings at 10 a.m. It's a surprise for some people it's 10 a.m. because the library is not open. But if you get there from 9:45 to 10:15, the elevators are unlocked. And that allows us to have the library with people who are not always quiet, who do move more quickly, who are learning how to be in a social situation. So it gives us the freedom to really be developmentally appropriate with the kids. We know sitting is not a regular behavior for that person, and that's not an good expectation to have. So there's a lot of movement, hand movements, dancing, playing, and engaging physically with the materials, not just in an auditory responsive way.
You mentioned elevators, so that's downtown,
that's
right?
That's downtown. And then at the Valley, we have one at 11 o'clock. So there's two options, 10 o'clock downtown, 11 o'clock in the Valley. They are open. You just walk in the door and go to the kids' area.
Okay, this question goes back to both of you. Maybe we'll start with you, Taylor. Kindness and reading. How do you see those two things go together?
Books are just a big connector for people. So one way to be kind to your kids is just to sit and read with them. It's not only a good time to spend together, good quality time, but every time you're reading with your child, you're teaching them. And it's just really important to incorporate that every day, really.
Would you add to that, MJ?
Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about what you see at the library with engagement with books.
As Taylor said, you know, the first person in a child's life is their adult, is their primary caregiver, is their teacher, whether that's their parent or their grandparent or the auntie or whoever. Books at that age are a tool for engagement. A lot of it is the sitting next to, leaning on, so that you get the vibration of the voice. You get that this is a safe, comfortable place to engage in these external words. Dialogic reading is where reading the words is really not the most important thing. It's there for vocabulary expansion, but the sound of the words, the rhythms of the sentences on the page, having a child initiate pointing at something, and so going with that interactive element so that it's a reciprocity. It's not just a feeding one way off the book into the mind. There's engagement. And then the parent or the adult in that is definitely the facilitator. Communicating it's desirable. We're choosing to give our time doing this behavior is an enormous endorsement. So that it communicates this is a value that I hold to engage in this way. Some people are not highly verbal. And so this would give a way to give words out there and then to grow from the words on the page into the interaction. So it kind of can supplement if you don't know what you want to say. It can give you a tool for that.
And seems to, as screen time seems to be going up everywhere, that this might be a great way to communicate with kids.
Screen time is going up. And there are very mixed analysis of the benefits and the costs of that screen time in a young person's mind. There are studies that say, yes, children under two should have screen time. One of the things that doesn't always get as much play on that statement is that it's just like a book in a lap. It needs to be facilitated. Having that adult there as an element of that engagement is crucial to their getting value in that. The flat screen feeding in, really the benefit to a human mind as we understand optimal mind functioning at this time, if it's short, fast-paced things, it doesn't allow the mind to see things in a continuum. And the brain develops differently with short inputs of attention changes. And we're going to be seeing how the brain changes and how those brain changes manifest in our human interactions as we have more time living with that world.
That's the voice of MJ Grandy. She's the Youth Services Librarian for the Juneau Public Libraries, and we're here talking about the 2018 Year of Kindness for Kids. Taylor, there's a lot of resources and stuff going on with this Year of Kindness. Where can people learn more?
If you visit our website at rockjuno.org, there's a lot of resources on there. We are posting on there. We're doing different community spotlights of organizations that are focused on these different sectors of young people. Also on there, you'll find a calendar that has community events such as family nights, different play groups, things like that. We have a document on there that is 100 plus 18 ways to be kind to young people, which is also an excellent resource. It's just different ideas from donating old used clothes, to attending a family night at the library, to waving at kids on the bus as they're driving by. It's a big list of a bunch of different creative ways to do that. And we do have a paper document of it as well that we're hoping to produce in larger quantities and get out into the community too. So,
okay,
little fold-out book.
Yes. And we actually are on Facebook. So we do encourage everyone to follow us on Facebook and Instagram, just our Rock Juno page. That's where we're posting all of our Year of Kindness things. And we are also using hashtag Rock Juno to kind of spread the word and hopefully get some input from other people in the community. If you're doing things for other people, or you see people being kind to young kids, taking a picture or posting and using that hashtag, we can pull from that and kind of put a spotlight on it and thank the people in our community that are just being kind.
Okay. MJ, what are your three favorite books right now to share with toddlers?
I'm a nonconformist. I'm going to go back to what she said first. Raising Our Children with Kindness and Focusing on This Year of Kindness for Children. Some people have the thought that children should be more kind. And as in all things, we learn what we experience. So if we want kind children, we need to give them experiences of receiving kindness. So this is as much about having the adults in our town really care deeply for our children on individual ways and systemic ways. That's a real big key for this year.
Okay. Taylor, can you highlight once more where we can go on the web or social media?
RockJuno.org, or you can follow us on Facebook, and it's just RockJuno.
And this is the 2018 Year of Kindness for Kids. That's Taylor Shea. She's the Early Literacy Outreach Coordinator for AEYC. We've been speaking with MJ Grandy as well, the Youth Services Librarian for the Juno Public Libraries. Is there anything missing or anything you'd like to add?
One last thing that we're working on currently that we're very excited about. We have begun producing some kindness ambassador buttons. We are taking artwork from kids in the community. We have a little template that they've been coloring at different events that we've hosted so far. And we've put them into the background of a little button and with Kindness Ambassador 2018 on it. So we're going to be bringing these to the schools and different places around town, the libraries and things like that, just to encourage people to pass these out and acknowledge other people in their lives that are being kind. And we're really excited about that because we got some really cool artwork and lots of variety. So.
And so March is focused on toddlers. I assume we're going to go up in age from there throughout the year, and you'll come back and keep us updated?
Yeah. February was toddlers, actually. And then in March, we're moving on to elementary school, which there's a lot going on in that sector right now, so we're pretty excited about that.
And when technically aren't we kids anymore?
That's
would you
a very
say?
Good question.
Never. MJ says never.
To remember the story about toys for the young at heart. As long as you're young at heart, you're a kid for somebody.
I agree with that.
Thanks for coming on the show, you too.
Thanks for having us. Bye-bye.
If you're so kind, can you let down your hand? Can you let down your hand? If you're so kind, if you're so strong, can you shelter the weak? Will you listen as the strangers bring them calm? Don't ask for much, but an open mind. Kindness can cure a broken heart. Honey, are you feeling kind? If you're so kind, let down your head? Will you try and understand when it goes wrong? Days come and gone, and it's been said and been done. I will shelter you with my love, my forgiveness. Kindness, don't ask for much, but an open mind. Kindness can cure a broken heart. Honey, are you feeling?
KTOO is supported by listeners like you and by Breezin, where Chef Moorhead offers a large selection of hot breakfast items, burritos, and daily lunch and dinner menus for takeout at the Lemon Creek Breezin or online at breezin.com.
You are listening to a Juno afternoon here on Monday, February 26th, 2018. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 23 minutes past the hour. In the studio with me now is Rosemary Walling. She's going to be presenting tomorrow night at the Marie Drake Planetarium with a presentation titled From Sojourner to Curiosity, 20 Years on Mars. Rosemary, welcome to the show.
Hi, Scott.
It's nice to have you here. 20 years on Mars, these rovers have been roving?
Yes, the first one was 1997, which was Sojourner. And it was about the size of a microwave. And it didn't have a very long life. It just was sort of a proof of principle.
Okay.
And then we've had the two Spirit and Opportunity, sort of medium-sized rovers, and now the last one's Curiosity.
Okay. When did you start following their progress?
Well, off and on forever, but seriously, in the last few days. No, you know, Mars has been something of interest to everyone, and it's always in the news. And following the water on Mars has never been uninteresting.
And you teach astronomy for UAS. Of all the things astronomy, what is it about Mars that interests you?
I think I like trying to figure out the history of Mars, which when they look for... First, they looked for evidence of water, and there's lots of evidence for water. That's not in question. The next, they look for the evidence that sometime in Mars' past, it could be habitable, which means that You had liquid water, probably a stable climate for a period of time, and that you had some source of energy and organic molecules so that something could form. And I think with Curiosity now, they pretty much check that off, that at some point in the past, Mars was habitable in that sort of as we know it on Earth. I mean, there's lots of times when people talk about life might not be as we know it, but just for the kind of life that we have here with microbes and so forth, they think at some point in the past there were habitable conditions. And so the next step of that would be to try to look for actual signatures of life in the past.
Okay. Of these four rovers, you say two are still operational. Is that right?
That's right. So Sojourner was just very brief. Spirit lasted from 2014 to 2010. Basically, it got stuck in sand dunes and couldn't really travel anymore, and then they lost contact with that. Opportunity was also landing in 2014, but it's still going on to the present. And it's not moving very fast now. It's kind of an elderly rover, but it's still making a lot of progress, and it's making new discoveries, too. Curiosity was launched in 2015, and no, it's 2012, and so last year it had its fifth anniversary.
What kind of material can these sample and pick up, and are they taking pictures and sending those? How's all that work?
Yeah, so there's a wealth of photographs. NASA pretty much makes everything online, so all the photographs are there, some processed more than others. So there's been lots of cameras, but there's also been the ability to take pictures of very close up and look at objects. And the last rover, Curiosity, has lots of cameras. It's got several spectrometers, maybe three, that are able to take light and look at the details so that you can get some idea of composition and also temperatures. And then it also has something where it can drill and dig, pick up a sample, and then put it in something to look at the isotopes or to look at the elements in very good detail. It also has an ability to shoot a laser out so that it vaporizes material on the surface of Mars, and then a camera can look and take the data and analyze that through a spectrometer and find out. So we know a lot about certain locations in Mars because we've actually gone to the ground and looked there. And we can combine that with what's learned from more than one remote sensing satellite in orbit around Mars and learn more about the whole planet. So that those two kind of go together, probes on the ground and probes and detectors mapping from space, just like they do around Earth.
Okay, at your presentation tomorrow, 7 p.m. at the Marie Drake Planetarium, I imagine you'll have some of these images. What else do you plan to share?
Well, there'll be lots of pretty pictures. You can't give a talk without pretty pictures. They'll give a little bit of the history of the rovers and then probably focus more on the things that we've found more recently about that. Before the talk, which is at 7, at 6 p.m., people who might be interested in becoming volunteers are welcome. If somebody shows up, we can do a little bit of training, get them oriented to things. If somebody is just curious and wants to know more about the planetarium, they can show up at 6. Another thing I would say is that we're also trying to start a fundraising drive to try to replace the current star ball with a digital projector, which will allow us to do a lot of things that we can't currently do.
If somebody hasn't been to the planetarium before, how would you describe how to get there?
Well, it's in the Marie Drake building, which is the school that's next to Juno Douglas High School. And if you look at the Marie Drake building, there's a soccer field on the right, and then a little asphalt pathway that goes straight to a planetarium dome. So you can look for the dome. It's not hard to miss.
So, if I may ask, what was it, a couple of weeks now when SpaceX did the big launch, and there's all this publicity around that, and Elon Musk wanting to, saying that someday we're going to have a station on Mars, a colony on Mars. What do you think of that?
Plausible, really. The interesting thing about all the stuff that's going on now outside of NASA, although they do talk, I mean, if you have information, you want to share it. But there's just sort of a different attitude, and maybe it's one with a little more risk than NASA might take. They tend to do things step by step in a very careful manner.
They don't send Teslas into space.
They don't. I mean, I'm not sure that they've sent something off into nowhere for any reason, but it was a good test of the rocket and the capability, and it certainly got people's interest in Mars again. So that's good.
Okay. We've been speaking with Rosemary Walling. She's going to be giving a presentation tomorrow night, Tuesday, at the Marie Drake Planetarium. And it's titled From Sojourner to Curiosity, 20 Years on Mars. Sounds really interesting. If people want more information, Rosemary, where's the best place to get that?
There's a little bit on the planetarium website, which is mariedrakeplanetarium.org. And if you want to contact me, you can send an email there if you have any more questions on this.
Sounds good. Is there anything else you'd like to add, Rosemary?
I think that's it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. Ground control to Major Tom. Commencing countdown, engines on. Check ignition and may God's love be with you.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services in the Jordan Creek Center. Northern Audiology offers diagnostic medical hearing expertise and digital technology hearing instruments. 789-6780.
Hi, this is George Kuhar. Join me, Taylor Vidic of the Quaint Trails, guitarist-writer Avery Stewart, and rap artist T.J. Kramer, a.k.a. Manor, for a special songwriter's edition of Alaska Originals. We'll play an hour of their favorite tunes and talk about the writing. Doors open at 6, cameras roll at 6:30 p.m. at the 360 North Studio in the KTOO building, Thursday, March 1st. A suggested $5 donation at the door. We'll see you there.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, about 25 minutes until the top of the hour. Yes, we're looking forward to that show on Thursday with George Kuhar and friends, rap artist T.J. Manor Kramer, Taylor Vidic, and Avery Stewart. It'll be recorded for television. Doors open at 6, and we're going to roll the cameras at 6:30. A suggested donation of $5 to support the artists at the door. And it's if you've seen a Songwriter Circle concert, it's going to be set up like that. George Kuhar is going to host, and they're just going to go around the circle and play tunes. And I know that Manor is going to have a DJ with him, so it should be a very cool show. And it'll later be available on demand at 360north.org and broadcast statewide. In preparation for that, here's a little George Kuhar.
Thank you.
Thank you. So that's George Kuhar, who's going to be hosting our Songwriters Edition of Alaska Originals this Thursday at 360 here in the KTOO building. Just a reminder, the doors are at 6 o'clock and the cameras are going to roll at 6:30. His other guests include Avery Stewart, Taylor Vidic, and TJ Manor Kramer. Here's Manor playing with DJ Judo. He'll be one of the guests this Thursday.
Did what I was told, a rebel in my eyes, I'm bold. That's why these cats really can't compare to me. Lyrically, linguistically, physically, and mentally. Look, you were never meant to be. A theory don't got this to me. And I can have them ducking the ins and outs of truancy. Everything our lives we see, but we just keep on witnessing. Blinded by society, corrupting spirituality. Substances devouring anything empowering or anything that good will bring. But I could ride the outer ring if I could only leave the scene. But I can't, so I stay up to the utmost, I check my progress, I digress. I just hope that I can only make it out alive. I put on them boots, I tie them up just to strive. Yo, give me that loot, a modern day Jesse James. This life puts a strain on relationships I maintain. Thank you, moonshine. Oh, sweet Missouri, that Midwest potion got me drinking in heaven. I step to the next level of intensity, but I fall right back down, and that's what makes me me. Yo, like LeVon Hales, burn your train to cinders. I'll take what I need, I don't need no mind benders. So throw the cash on down, or we'll tear you apart. And you remember what happened to them trains after dark. Because I grew up bitter, and yes, I grew up mean. I've had to see all tight issues that I wish I never seen. So thank you, moonshine. Oh, sweet Missouri, we're just a mass vandal. Watching these peasants scurry in a hurry and revolt motion. Feel the effect, cause we'll tamper with your livelihood. Protect your neck. That train of thought is inflammable. We rise against it's bad intent. You think we're corrupting, we're not. No, we're only taking what's ours that you took from the start. And this is homeland security, pure in my heart. A rebel's blood in the flesh. I never second guess it. You're a fool with this movement. This is just checkmate.
Hey there, KTOO fans. This is Paula Poundstone of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. I'm heading to Juneau to do a special performance for the station this March 8th at Centennial Hall. The show starts at 7 p.m. Tickets are going fast, so don't miss out. Get yours at ktoo.org, the station, and the Jack. Woo-da hoo-da!
You're listening to a Juneau afternoon here on Monday, February 26th, 2018, about 15 minutes till the top of the hour. Scott Burton, your host today. And here in the studio with me now is Jody DeBryan. She's the curator of collections at the Juneau Douglas City Museum and director Jane Lindsay. Welcome to the show, you two.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's nice to have you here. Two very exciting shows coming up here at the museum. Jody, should we start with you?
Sure.
12 by 12.
Yes, Friday starts our 14th annual 12 by 12 exhibit. This year the theme was seasons, and we have 56 submissions that was brought in last week by members of the community, all ages. We had a couple classes participate, which is really great. We have 12 pieces by those students.
14 years, mm-hmm. 14th annual, right?
Yes.
How would you describe this show's popularity?
I think it's an interesting way. It's a fun way for a lot of the artists just to maybe work on this, you know, 12 by 12, so it's a small kind of canvas, but to challenge themselves to whatever theme we put out each year. And we have some regulars that, you know, every year they know it's happening and they are excited to get their piece in, but every year there's a few other new names that happen, so it's a great way to connect with the community who might not always show their work around town.
How about you, Jane?
And, you know, I would say that...
It's a community all call. So we're celebrating creativity in all of its forms, all ages, all disciplines, all levels of maturity in art making. And over the years, we seem to get a pretty steady number of kids who are doing the art. We're getting high schoolers who are doing the art. We've gotten fiber artists who are doing it. And we try to make the themes evocative enough where you can really participate in any way that it fits the level you're at and the medium that you work in.
So 12 by 12, 1 foot by 1 foot, right?
Correct.
Describe some of the submissions that you are probably already hanging, getting ready for Friday.
Yes, I am already hanging. Spent the morning doing that. I mean, there's a lot of, being seasons, there's a lot of natural landscape and those kinds of things. Jeff Brown submitted one this year, which is leaves, and it's covered really nicely, and it's absolutely beautiful.
Actual leaves?
Wow. Yeah. We had three artists who submitted four pieces, one for each season, so those make a really great two-by-two kind of collage on the wall. And the kids' art that we got in this year has a lot of glitter. So don't get too close to them or get a little bit of glitter on you, but it's worth it.
I think I see some in your
probably.
And, you know, interestingly enough, we had one artist come in, and she talked about seasonings in her work, which I thought was pretty cool. I was like, really? That's pretty neat. So, yeah.
And you said 56 people submitted.
Yes.
All right.
Or probably less people, but 56 submissions, because a couple of them did four each. So.
Okay. Yeah. I imagine that beyond some great art, it's a very social interaction, especially so First Friday. I bet all of these artists are going to be there and get to share the art with the community. Do you see that as well?
It is. It is. On First Friday, you know, a lot of the artists come in and, you know, they're proud to be like, that's my work and that kind of thing, especially the high schoolers and the kids who maybe have never seen their art on a wall in a museum before. So it's always really great to have the different artists and be like, oh, look what you did. I didn't think of that. Or and interact with their piece and other people's pieces.
So I bet it's amazing, but sort of corralling 46 or 56 or however many people, that must have been a challenge for you and your team.
Well, so they have the whole, all of last week, Tuesday through Saturday, to bring in the pieces. So it's mostly a one by one as they come in. Sometimes there's two or three that come in at the same time at lunch or something. But once we get all the pieces there, and so like my Monday morning is always like, okay, what do I have and what looks good next to each other? So, corralling the people isn't as much as how do all these pieces now interact with each other, because there's an overall theme, but of course there's many different mediums and styles, and it's really fun.
I would say by far, though, it's the Saturday, the last day of submissions, mm-hmm. that you usually work, which is really well planned, because wasn't there 29 or so?
Yeah, so at the end of the day on Friday, we only had 24 submissions, so we got all the way up to 56 on Saturday. So the snow did not deter Juno, so you can just tell that it's a really true Juno community exhibit, because they went through the snow to get to us to drop off their pieces.
Always last minute. And that is usually pretty standard. You can sort of say, you know, most of these are going to come in on the last day.
I bet you have something in common with the Folk Festival Board. I think their application was just due on Friday, too. And it's due at 5 p.m., no late submissions, that kind of thing. All right, so 12 by 12, the opening, the official opening is this Friday, is that right?
Yes, first Friday from 4:30 to 7, March 2nd.
Okay, and how long will it be up?
Through the mid-April. I think it's April 22nd.
Okay. And that's not all you have going on right now, right, Jane?
Yeah, and so not only is this physical work in a building for you, the public, to come in and enjoy from Junoites, but obviously we live in a digital age. So the National Museum of Women in the Arts, they have Women's History Month in March. And one thing we're doing is we're submitting, it's hashtag 5 Women Artists. And so in March, we're going to celebrate 5 Women Artists in our collection. And I should say, women who, we have art in our collection by them. And this year's theme was women of color. So it was pretty fun to look at all that we had and submit these 5 pieces.
And so throughout the month of March, you'll be releasing these online. Is that right? Or on
yes,
Facebook?
Online on our Facebook site, and it's every Friday.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it going to be a surprise, or do you feel comfortable sharing our five artists?
We can share the five artists.
Okay.
I'm not exactly sure which order they'll be done in the Friday, so that'll be a surprise of which one you get to see information about each Friday. But Anna Brown Elders, Cecilia Kuntz, Florence Shakely, Shken George, and Marie Olson are the five Tlingit artists that we have selected, or Tlingit women who have done art for our collection.
Interesting. And is the hashtag, it's hashtag five women artists?
It is. And so with this National Museum of Women in the Arts, we're participating in it, and museums all over the country and all over the world are participating in it. So if you're going on Facebook and you click on the hashtag, it'll bring you to other posts that other museums and other places have done too. So.
And one of the things I want to add when we say there, we have art by these women in our collection, not all cultures may see art in the same way, and these women in their own right, especially someone like Marie Olson and Cecilia Kuntz, they had incredible careers as community activists, also educators, but they also did art, and that's what we're celebrating. And then you look at other artists like Anna Ellers and Florence Mark Shakely and Shken George, they produce art probably on a more regular basis and sell and whatnot. Something I just would like to add that I was really fascinated by when Alyssa Borges was doing the biographies of these women is the strong tie to learning from other women, especially their mothers, and also passing that on to other women and their daughters and being teachers. And I just think that's really beautiful.
Yeah, that lineage, indeed. Wow. You know, thinking of Facebook, I was looking at your Facebook page today, and I noticed that you use it for various things, to talk about events, as many do. But you also use it as a sort of a crowdsource research tool, right? Like, you have these. Tell us about that.
We do. So we use it to, as you say, to advertise our events and things. We also use it to get history out there. So I do Throwback Thursday posts using mostly photographs from our collection to get a little bit of Juneau history out there. But on Wednesdays, I post a photograph from our Joseph Alexander collection, unidentified portraits, to try to get the community to help me give these portraits a name. And that's been going on since 2014 or 15, I believe, is when we started that. So it's been a couple years now, and it's a great way to get names and what year they graduated high school from or any little bits and pieces that the community has for us.
Out of, say, 10 photos that you put up, how many do you get information for, would you say?
I think we're averaging about 80%, actually.
Wow. What a tool.
Especially the high school-aged ones. If we get into a batch and it's like, oh, this is all the class of 58, so every time we post one, we'll get the name because that class is still around and active. And then we get into maybe some of the passport photos, and those maybe aren't so much, but... yeah, probably about 75-80% we've gotten names for.
And it was really great because Jody came up with this idea after we had an exhibit on Joseph Alexander, and it was something like 6,000 images mm-hmm. were either pulled out of envelopes or just there was no identification on them. So she just took them and kind of put them all next to each other on a wall and asked folks, tell us who these people are. Help us. And then we realized it was really popular, and people were really enjoying it, and they were calling and saying, well, I didn't get to look at the exhibit, but I really think I could help. So then she started posting online.
What is the best Facebook page, or what should we look for on Facebook to find you?
Yeah, so the Facebook page is actually run by our friends group. So it's facebook.com/Juneau Museum Friends, or you look up the Friends of the Juneau Douglas City Museum.
Okay, so we'll be looking forward to that for the month of March, or in the meantime, Friday afternoon, I should say, right?
Yes.
4:30?
Yes. 4:30. Come by the museum.
Sounds great. We've been speaking with Jody DeBryan. She's the curator of collections at the Juneau Douglas City Museum, and also Jane Lindsay, the director at the museum. Thank you so much for coming on the show, you two, and this great work. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Yes, just keep in touch with us. Facebook is a good way, or go to our website. We do have two public programs in March. March 17th is Katie Giorgio and the Orpheus Project, which is the anniversary of the sinking of the Princess Sophia. So she's going to be talking about that March 17th, 10:30 at the museum, and that's free. Coffee is supplied by Heritage, courtesy of Heritage Coffee Company. And the construction of the Glacier Highway by George Danner III, on March 31st, and that's at 10:30. And George Danner has a family collection of early Juno and highway construction. That's pretty fascinating. And he's going to just show that to the public and talk about how he started his own website with his family history.
All right. More information at Friends of the Juno Douglas City Museum Facebook page, right?
Yes.
All right. Thanks, you too.
Thanks.
Thanks, Scott.
The Alaska State Museum's solo artist exhibition series continues with Ebb and Flow, landscape paintings of hushed stillness by award-winning Alaskan artist Linda Infante Lyons. An opening reception will be held first Friday, March 2nd, starting at 4:30, with an artist's talk starting that evening at 7. The exhibition will continue till May 5th. For more information, go to museums.alaska.gov.
Thanks for tuning in to a Juno afternoon. Currently 35 degrees here in the capital city. The forecast for tonight calls for rain and snow showers, becoming all snow after 3 a.m. with a low around 33. New snow accumulation of less than a half inch possible. Tomorrow, Tuesday, snow showers, high near 33, southeast wind around 10 miles per hour. Chance of precip 90%. New accumulation of snow around an inch. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno afternoon.